This morning, America's First News starts right after this. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Rules approved. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Wednesday, January 22nd. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
While most of us slept, the Senate approved the rules for President Trump's impeachment trial. Here, one significant change.
The first case of the deadly coronavirus has been reported in the U.S. A man from Washington State is being treated and observed.
In sports, five-time World Series champion Derek Jeter of the Yankees has been elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame, along with Rockies MVP Larry Walker.
And schools that take away phones from students now have to address the separation anxiety that's causing.
Schools trying to sort of thread the needle in terms of taking devices away from students but not causing conflict or arguments in the classroom. So there are a lot of different methods. One teacher even put phones in a clear plastic pouch that she would wear every day so students could see their device and know that they were safe but not touch them.
Reporter Sarah Krause at the Wall Street Journal on the domino effect of distracting smartphones at school. Plenty of tempers flaring as the Senate passed rules for the impeachment trial of President Trump. After sitting through more than 12 hours of legal presentations, lawmakers just before 2 o'clock this morning gave their approval along party lines. One notable change, each side is now scheduled to get 3 days of opening arguments instead of just two. And they pushed off until later. Big questions over whether to call for fresh testimony and new evidence. Democrat Congressman Jerry Nadler of New York.
The heck of a nerve to criticize the House for not issuing subpoenas when the president said he would oppose all subpoenas, and we've issued a lot of subpoenas, and he opposes all of them, and they're tied up in court.
Pat Cipollone, a member of the Trump legal team.
Mr. Nadler, you owe an apology to the President of the United States and his family. You owe an apology to the Senate. But most of all, you owe an apology to the American people.
Beginning as soon as today, by the way, each side will make opening arguments, a process that could take up to 6 days, not including Sundays. Proceedings begin at 1 p.m. Far from the doings on Capitol Hill, President Trump is selling his U.S. vision overseas. He spoke yesterday at the World Economic Forum in Switzerland, touting the American economy and the new trade agreement between the U.S. and China. For more than a half hour, he addressed global business and government leaders, reading off a list of accomplishments from low unemployment to increases in foreign investment.
America is thriving. America is flourishing. And yes, America is winning again like never before.
The president also reiterated his administration's promise for a middle-class tax cut. He told the Wall Street Journal it would be subject to his reelection and GOP gains in the House, where Democrats now hold the majority. Another round of tax cuts would be in addition to those that Mr. Trump signed in 2017, but there have been no details. He also verbally elbowed political opponents back home, saying, quote, "We will never let radical socialists destroy our economy, wreck our country, or eradicate our liberty." Revisiting our top story with rules for the impeachment trial now set. Here's a look at what else to expect from only the third trial in history of a sitting president. For that, we're joined by Bart Janssen, justice reporter at USA Today. Bart, what about these 3 days of opening statements?
During that whole period, the senators can't ask questions. They can't pose stuff like along the way. And when they ask the questions after those opening arguments, they have to submit them in writing through the presiding officer, who will be Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts. And so it's going to be a very formal affair where the arguments over the first 4 days are just going to be lengthy lectures by the lawyers involved.
Wow. So when the questions are submitted to Chief Justice John Roberts, he will read them out loud,
I guess? Yes, Yeah. They submit them, and then he poses them to the either the House Democratic managers, who are the prosecutors, there are seven of them, or the White House lawyers, who are being led by White House counsel Pat Cipollone and Jay Sekulow.
Wow. It's interesting because I guess if Mr. Roberts is to read the questions, right, he will take the drama out of what might be included in a question, or perhaps the sarcasm that might be intended to be delivered by a lawmaker who might ask the question?
Yeah, I would not expect the Chief Justice to include sarcasm in the way he poses the questions. What it will also do is, you won't have a senator leaping to his feet and say, "I object," or "What about this? Isn't this a lie?" It's I anticipate it's going to be a much more formal question, such as, when you said such and such, does that mean such and such? It will, you know, try to draw out the conclusions or what can be drawn from the evidence from the argument presented. Of course, we have this big argument about how much evidence that the House collected will be revealed or at least entered into the formal record. They'll be talking about it, but do you get 90,000 pages of documents? We'll have to see.
Yeah, we're speaking with Bart Janssen, justice reporter at USA Today, talking about the impeachment trial. If I'm in Washington, D.C. on a, I don't know, one-day vacation, or I live in the area, can I just pop by and watch the proceedings?
I'm sorry, I'm not intimately familiar with how the rules for the tickets to the balcony go above, for the seating above the Senate chamber. I believe they are only handing out tickets through the Senate offices, so you'd want to check with your home state senator and see if you can get a ticket. There are limited seats, and you have to pass through quite a bit of security to get into the chamber, but it is a public trial. When they haven't closed the chamber to debate confidential issues, which they are, that is possible. You may see the Senate close down for sessions to debate.
Okay.
But yes, there will be public in the balcony above the chamber. C-SPAN plans to air coverage, as well as the typical cable, other cable news networks, but the cameras are operated by government workers, and so there's some heartburn from C-SPAN and others about who controls the cameras for the ability to, you know, focus on people in the chamber or which person should be focused on at a given moment.
Yeah.
Right now, we are having the rules are that government people will be operating those cameras, but that C-SPAN will provide the feed. So you can watch the public sessions of this trial on cable, operated by government workers.
Thanks, Bart. Bart Janssen, justice reporter at USA Today. Again, if you're interested on TV, proceedings begin at 1 p.m.
Now that Human Resources VP Ashley Campbell has Kronos for HR, payroll, talent, and time, she's managing her workforce like a rock star. She even has her own hype song.
I'm the spark before the fire. I'm the power in the train. I
have a really diverse workforce with different hours, skill sets, and pay grades.
Don't stop. I'm the dream and you should know that.
Now we're motivating and engaging the right people every step of the way.
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger.
The U.S. has its first case of a deadly strain of coronavirus. A man from Washington State who's in his 30s has been diagnosed after returning from a trip last week to Wuhan, China, believed to be where the outbreak started last month. He is the first patient to be diagnosed with the new coronavirus outside of Asia, where more than 400 people have been sickened and at least 9 have died. Washington Governor Jay Inslee.
We're very happy to say that he is in satisfactory condition, and as of this moment is being is very helpful in us identifying particular people that he may have been in contact with.
The CDC said last week that it was expecting cases in the U.S. and now says it expects more. Fears of a pandemic similar to the SARS outbreak that started in China and killed nearly 800 people back in 2002 and 3 have roiled global markets. The Chinese-ruled gambling hub of Macau confirmed its first case of pneumonia linked to the newly identified coronavirus and tightened body temperature screening measures in casinos and around the city. This portion of the program is brought to you by Kronos. Kronos knows that hiring and retaining a modern workforce of salaried, hourly, and full and part-time workers can be challenging, especially in today's competitive job market. That's why Kronos puts HR, payroll, talent, and time in one place. So HR professionals supporting a blended workforce have all the tools they need to engage and motivate their people every step of the way. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger. Kronos, workforce innovation that works. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with three big things you need to know.
Number one, Gordon, the Senate plunged into President Trump's impeachment trial with Republicans abruptly abandoning plans to cram opening arguments into 2 days, but solidly rejecting Democratic demands for more witnesses to expose what they deem Trump's trifecta of offenses. The day-long session started yesterday with a setback for Republican Senate Leader Mitch McConnell and the president's legal team, but it ended near 2 a.m. this morning with Republicans easily approving the rest of the trial rules, largely on their terms. Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff of California.
Well, and so we end where we started, with one party wanting a fair trial, and one party that doesn't.
Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
Here in the Senate, the president's lawyers will finally receive a level playing field with the House Democrats, and will finally be able to present the president's case. Finally, some fairness.
The trial will resume this afternoon. Number two, the Supreme Court is refusing to consider a fast-track review of a lawsuit that threatens the Obama-era health care law that makes it highly unlikely that the justices will decide the case before the 2020 election. The court denied a request by 20 mainly Democratic states and the Democratic-led House to decide quickly on a lower court ruling that declared part of the statute unconstitutional and cast a cloud over the rest. Number three, Harvey Weinstein spawned the Me Too movement. Now the former film giant is starring in the biggest trial of its era, a landmark moment in a global reckoning that has empowered women while shining a light on power dynamics in the workplace. Opening statements and the first witness testimony are expected today in Weinstein's New York City rape trial, where the possibility of life in prison looms for the once-celebrated Pulp Fiction producer. And Yankee great Derek Jeter came within one vote of being a unanimous pick for the Baseball Hall of Fame, falling just shy of the standard set when longtime teammate Mariano Rivera became the first unanimous selection last year. Jeter on the MLB Network.
Fans of New York, I mean, they're the ones that challenged me. I've said it before, I'll say it again, the greatest fans in the world. And, you know, they're the ones that pushed me day in and day out. I mean, the list goes on and on about the people that I can thank.
Larry Walker of the Rockies also earned baseball's highest honor in his last chance on the ballot.
Okay. How is Jeter not unanimous? Well, who's the person who didn't vote?
They'll find out.
390.
That person will be admonished for a long time.
396 out of 397 votes.
Oh, well.
Thanks, Jen. It is 22 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
New year, new budgets. Every small business has unique needs. When you partner with a Dell Small Business Technology Advisor, you get real-time, tailored advice. They'll even give you a free audit on your servers and storage devices to develop a custom solution to help improve your company's productivity. Plus, right now, upgrade to Windows 10 and get up to 45% off select business computers with Intel Core processors. To speak with a Dell Advisor, call 877-BUY-DELL. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Thanks for being with us. Smartphones have long been a scourge for teachers and administrators who have employed a range of strict measures to keep them out of the classroom. But it turns out that getting rid of phones introduced another distraction, withdrawal pangs. Sarah Krause, reporter at the Wall Street Journal, says now teachers across the country are testing their own methods for managing their students' phone-related angst. Sarah, what did you look at?
So what we looked at was schools trying to sort of thread the needle in terms of taking devices away from students but not causing conflict or arguments in the classroom. So there were a lot of different methods. Some included accruing points for the time spent not looking at the phone and being able to redeem those for extra credit or a drink at Starbucks. One teacher even put phones in a clear plastic pouch that she would wear every day so students could see their device and know that they were safe but not touch them.
Wow. This was the one who sort of made a device called the phony pack instead of a fanny pack.
Yeah, called
the
phony pack, like a fanny pack, exactly, but for phones and sort of like a daycare for phones.
So this stuff is not really working all the time, I guess.
You know, I think schools are still trying to find their footing in terms of the right balance. Some schools have really stringent, they collect it at the beginning of the day and it's locked away all day. Others are letting students sort of keep custody of their phones in yonder pouches, so like locking phone pouches that students can keep the device on them but can't reach it. So I think there's still an evolution underway in what schools feel is the right thing. I will say as more schools have laptops for all their students, they need the phone in the classroom less to the extent that they would have students do lessons or quizzes or something on the device. So I think there's this sort of ongoing shift.
Explain the how they make the pouches that the students actually get to wear and keep the phones on them but can't get inside the pouches.
So yonder pouches are increasingly used by celebrities, comedians, you know, performers who want audiences to focus purely on the show or not record it and share it on social media. So they're locking phone pouches where you need a special magnet to get them open. And there's actually like a rich YouTube channel of students trying to pry them open with magnets or pens, you know, anything to sort of get their device out of there. But these pouches are used by schools as well as artists to just keep phones from being a distraction, but also letting the owner of the phone keep custody of it.
Wow. These are the ones that occasionally get set on fire in a desperate attempt
unlock
them.
Yes.
Oh, we're speaking with Sarah Krause, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called Schools Took Away Students' Phones. Now they're treating separation anxiety. What else stood out here?
I think just the general shift towards using more of a carrot than a stick approach. So some teachers would create charging stations so their students could charge their phones during class and keep them either against a wall or on a table in the front. So again, they have the line of sight. They know that the phone is safe, but they just can't touch it because increasingly research has shown that even having a device on the desk is enough of a distraction that it weighs on grades and performance.
Yeah, that's something. So everybody in the same boat of handing them in at the start of school, that's just not working. I guess it's too much of a
for some. I think there's also a desire among some schools to teach students how to manage having their device with them but not access it and trying to sort of balance the 21st century connectivity with the need to focus.
Thanks, Sarah. Sarah Krause, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning.
Listen to us anytime on TuneIn at This Morning, America's First News with Gordon Deal, and on Stitcher at This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday, January 22nd. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Just before 2 this morning, the Senate passed rules for the Trump impeachment trial. First case of the coronavirus reported in the U.S. It's a man from Washington State. Wall Street Journal says the U.S. plans to expand travel restrictions to countries like Belarus, Nigeria, and Kyrgyzstan. Today's the deadline to file a claim if you're an Equifax data breach victim. Derek Jeter and Larry Walker elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. And the alert for falling iguanas in South Florida. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. It's time for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. Professional sports stadiums and arenas used to be built as standalone venues, like in the middle of a parking lot. But in a push to expand beyond game day, teams are increasingly building them as anchors for larger real estate projects. It's a story by Kendall Baker, sports editor at Axios. Kendall, what's trending?
This is a pretty big trend that's been happening for a decade, maybe even a little bit longer than that. And really, you know, in simple terms, I'd say even more simple terms than that, is that it appears that stadiums are just being built, I guess, not more responsibly, I don't know if that's the right way, but with more thought, and not simply as, you know, you think of stadiums of the past, kind of plop down in the middle of a parking lot,
but
used more as kind of an anchor for a larger real estate development. And as the late David Stern said, in a great quote, it's just, you're kind of just seeing more entrepreneurial use of ownership, right? Like the franchise is a media company, it's a digital company. It holds a key to a demographic, and it's also an epicenter for real estate development. So it's just, you know, it's again, not, I don't know if responsible is the right word, but it's just maybe more smart, more entrepreneurial.
All right, so give a couple examples here of what you profiled, like San Francisco.
Yeah, so the Chase Center, which is where the Warriors are playing, and unfortunately opened at not the best time for them when they're literally one of the worst teams in the league. But the real estate and the stadium itself is pretty cool. I've actually been down there. And so it's, you know, a $1.4 billion project, and you think, okay, yep, nice, huge stadium. But really what it is a large plot of land with the Chase Center where the Warriors are playing. There are also landlords to Uber. I think Uber's office space is like 580,000 square feet or something. And there's also 29 restaurants and retail spaces that they also lease out to. And so you're looking at a team that's now making a ton of money on things like rent, retail sales, things like that. And that money is not shared with the NBA or with the players. That's just, you know, straight revenue for the franchise. So it's just kind of a whole different way of doing business. And as more teams begin to do this, you know, the economics change, and then you also have the impact on the city itself.
Yeah. We're speaking with Kendall Baker, sports editor at Axios. He's written a piece entitled Stadiums Are the New Department Stores. So it doesn't have to be a high-end or large sprawling city like San Francisco. You referenced Green Bay, Wisconsin doing something similar.
Yeah, Green Bay is an interesting case. They've actually built an entire title town district that has everything from hotels to three-bedroom homes. They partnered with Microsoft to build some labs, high-tech labs, and studio space and stuff like that. So that's a whole other, specific example of a team, again, looking at their stadium as an anchor for something greater than that, as opposed to simply a destination, you know, for people to come watch a football game and go home.
You know, I'll reference it because I've been there, but what fascinates me about what's happening in Dallas is that what the Cowboys have done is not even necessarily tied to AT&T Stadium in Arlington, right? They've got this whole campus and almost city within a city in Frisco.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's where their practice facility is and team headquarters. So, yeah, it's interesting. You know, they have, obviously, Jerry World, and that's a whole destination in and of itself. And now they have this whole other thing that's almost like an adult, like, camp. Like, you want to they're building a 17-story apartment tower. So, yeah, let's go, you know, live there. You're a huge Cowboys fan. Now it's all of a sudden you're surrounded by even more Cowboys stuff. I'm sure they'll build up a whole kind of neighborhood there with shopping and all that. So, yeah, it's really kind of, you know, popping up these little neighborhoods with like a football theme. And that's really kind of appealing to some people, I think.
Yeah. Finish up with what's next, Kendall.
Well, I think what I'm watching is first of all, as I mentioned as an example, but I think it's also kind of what's next is Hollywood Park, which is being built in LA, where the Rams and Chargers will play. I think is probably going to be the most extreme example of this, just because of the sheer scale of it. I mean, it's a $10 billion complex. It's huge. If you look at a bird's eye view, aerial view, the stadium itself, which is kind of what anchors it again, is like one small part of it. There's just massive space for parks. There's condos. I think they have 300 hotel rooms. They have like tons of retail space. So that's the project I'm watching. And I believe it's supposed to open this year.
Thanks, Kendall. Kendall Baker, sports editor at Axios. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Glad you could spend some time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. It is time now for the mic drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, you'd have to imagine that one of the biggest rules of being a professional burglar is to make sure that you can actually carry your pilfered goods away from the scene of the crime. Small detail that was apparently lost on one thief in Australia. Police in South Australia said on Facebook that three under-construction homes were burglarized Monday morning in Wallaroo, and the culprit was caught on camera using a dolly to carry a dishwasher out of one of the homes. Seemed like an ingenious plan on the surface, but the problem occurred when the man takes the dolly over the curb into the road and the dishwasher falls off and lands on its side. Police said they're working to identify the suspect, whom they might be able to identify via the severely dented dishwasher in their hideout.
I'm no expert, but I've moved a handful of times.
Yes.
And normally even the professionals use straps.
Yes.
To attach the dishwasher to the dolly.
Right.
To avoid problems like it tipping over on its side and getting dented.
Yes. And I'd like to shame this person even further by saying I believe they came sort of backwards off of the curb, which actually would make it, you would think, less likely to fall off. They didn't go, you know, the dishwasher wasn't in front of them bouncing off of the curb.
It
was behind them. They sort of pulled it behind them, which you generally think would be less likely to come off the curb. It wasn't like he went straight forward over the curb that way, which, again, that if I was doing that, I would think it would fall over.
Right, because then you kind of control the wheels maybe a little bit more, I would think.
Yeah, so
They could gently go over the curb and not bounce so much.
Yeah, so just check out this guy's house. The dented dishwasher is is where you will find him. And the NFL has been quite a spectacle. NFL draft, has become quite a spectacle in recent years. But that doesn't mean the league can't up the ante even more. Say hello to the draft on water. According to a tweet by the LA Times, which came with some very detailed artist renderings, this year's NFL draft will take place on water amidst the fountains of the Bellagio in Las Vegas. Players selected in the draft will be taken to the main stage by boat.
Mm.
The internet, as you can imagine, had plenty of jokes, and some were already placing their bets as to when some attention-seeking draftee would jump ship on their way to meet Roger Goodell, and whether or not the boat-carrying picks for the downtrodden franchises like, oh, say, the Browns or Jets would even make it to the stage without taking on water.
Oh, man.
they're just, I mean, it's hard enough to pull off a big national broadcast like that, right? And make everything sort of go seamlessly.
Right.
To sort of add this element to it, I feel like it's just asking for trouble.
I guess the only thing that works in their favor is the timing of it all.
Yeah.
Because it does take several minutes.
Right.
Right between draft pick announcements. So I don't know.
You know, jumping on the boat. And then, you know, again, how fast is this boat going to make it up there? I mean, we could be, you know, three picks later before the person even makes it there.
An excited player stands up prematurely. The boat bangs against the dock, tips said player into water.
Yes.
Oh, I don't know about
that. Yes, it should make for some good viewing, though.
You don't sound any better, by the way. In fact, you sound close to awful.
I'm teetering on the edge of awful, sure.
This is Mike's thing now. He gets sick before he goes on what should be a spectacular vacation.
Yes, yeah. That's the way it works. I don't get sick that much during the year, but only right before vacation.
Nice job, Ace.
Yep.
13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Hottest in the game. Ain't nothing to it. World-class. I'm a cut of butter.
Now that Human Resources Director Fernando Pino has Kronos for HR, payroll, talent, and time, he's completely crushing it. He even has his own hype song.
Hottest in the game. Ain't nothing to it. World-class.
Supporting our entire workforce. Everyone has different hours, skill sets, and pay grades.
I'm on the top, I'm gonna rise up. I'm on the top, I'm gonna rise up. Now we are
motivating and engaging our people every step of the way.
Rise up to the front of the field. This is
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger.
I'm on the top, I'm gonna rise up. I'm on the top, top, I'm gonna rise up. I'm on the top.
The leader, without consulting us, made changes, a number of significant changes that significantly deviated from the 1999 Clinton resolution. We want to change those.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer yesterday during the Senate impeachment trial. More on that in just a moment. Let's not get too hung up on the so-called dad bod being a cool look. New research is suggesting that the more weight you carry around your midsection, the more likely you are to die prematurely. A report published in the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology says heart attack survivors who carry excess fat around their waist are at increased risk of another heart attack. Previous studies have shown that abdominal obesity is an important risk factor for having a first heart attack, but this one shows the potential for a second heart attack or even stroke. Most patients, 78% of men, 90% of women, had abdominal obesity in the study, defined as a waist circumference of 37 inches or above for men, 31 inches or higher for women. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with three big things you need to know.
Number one, Gordon senators approved rules early this morning for the third presidential impeachment trial in history after President Trump's legal team clashed with Democrats over their allegations of abuse of power and obstruction of justice. The marathon session caused tempers to flare among both House prosecutors and the White House defense team, prompting Chief Justice John Roberts to step in.
I think it is appropriate at this point for me to admonish both the House managers and the President's counsel in equal terms to remember that they are addressing the world's greatest deliberative body.
Before the session started, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell altered his own proposed rules and will now allow each side 3 days for opening arguments instead of two. Republicans later shot down proposed Democratic amendments for subpoenas to be issued for witnesses and documents blocked by the White House related to Trump's dealings with Ukraine. Number two, a new virus that has killed 9 people, infected hundreds, and reached the U.S. could mutate and spread as authorities scrambled to contain the disease during the Lunar New Year travel season. Health officials in China say the number of cases has surpassed 440.
Our judgment is the origin was the exposure to wild animals at the seafood market.
The World Health Organization will hold an emergency meeting today to determine whether to declare a rare global public health emergency over the disease, which has now been detected in the U.S., Taiwan, Thailand, Japan, South Korea, and Macau. Number three, the Trump administration plans to add 7 countries to a group of nations subject to travel restrictions, including Nigeria, along with others in Africa and Asia. Administration officials say the countries wouldn't necessarily face blanket bans on travel to the U.S., but could have restrictions placed on specific types of visas, such as business or visitor visas. Historic Allen Fieldhouse erupted in pandemonium last night as number 3 Kansas was putting the finishing touches on an 81-60 win over rival Kansas State in men's college basketball. The bedlam centered around a dust-up turn brawl with punches thrown, benches cleared, and a chair lifted as a weapon. Kansas coach Bill Self.
That was an embarrassment by on our part for the role that we played in it. There will be consequences that I'm sure I'll announce.
Indeed, lengthy suspensions are likely.
That was nasty.
That was bad.
Holy cow. I mean, the game was over.
Yep.
That was the final play of the game.
Yep.
Jeez. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. The National Weather Service in Miami last night issued an unofficial warning for falling iguanas due to the unusual cold snap that's hit the Sunshine State. It explains that since iguanas are cold-blooded, they slow down or become immobile when temps drop into the 40s. They may fall from trees, but they are not dead, even though they stiffen up. One expert told USA Today that about 50 degrees, iguanas can become lethargic. It's when the temperature drops to about 40 degrees or lower that their blood doesn't move around as quickly. In Fort Lauderdale earlier this morning, it was 43 degrees. This week's cold snap, by the way, should be short-lived. Temperatures are forecast to rebound into the mid-70s for highs in Miami by tomorrow. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.